Today we're going to look at Daniel chapter 6, the sixth chapter of the book of Daniel. This is the very familiar account of Daniel in the lion's den. We'll begin by reading through the entire sixth chapter while I make a few related comments to the text. Then we'll focus on how Daniel was able to conduct himself in such a way in the face of such trying circumstances. First, it needs to be noted that this is more than 500 years before Christ, and the Persians had just conquered the Babylonians. Darius had just been appointed to rule Babylon. The last two verses of chapter 5 of the book of Daniel says, "That very night Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain, and Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old." Now we begin reading in chapter 6, verses 1 through 3. It says, "It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. And so one of Darius' first responsibilities," we read, "was to appoint administrators over the territory won from the Babylonians. And because of Daniel's extensive experience under Nebuchadnezzar for almost 40 years, he was the likely choice for what we might call the prime minister." Picking up in verse 4, we read, "At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, 'We will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God.' And so Daniel encountered hostility in the new Persian government, probably because his enemies did not appreciate the elevation of a Jewish captive. They determined that the way to get rid of Daniel was to force him to choose between obedience to his God and obedience to the government." In verses 6 through 9, we read, "So these administrators and satraps went as a group to the king and said, 'May King Darius live forever.' The royal administrators, precepts, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or human being during the next 30 days, except to you, your majesty, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, your majesty, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed." So King Darius put the decree in writing. And so the government overseers came to the king as a group, we're told. They came as an official delegation to present their proposal, falsely implying that Daniel concurred with them. They'd mention all the different individuals involved in the government, and they said they have all agreed, in verse 7, that the king issue an edict. Of course, Darius had no reason to suspect these administrators would misrepresent Daniel's position in the matter, and this seemed like an idea that would contribute to the unification of the kingdom, and the time limit of 1 month seemed reasonable, so Darius signed the proposal into law. Continuing with verses 10 through 17, it says, "Now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. We're told in verse 12 they then went to King Darius and reminded him about the decree he signed. Then verse 13 says, "Then they said to the king, 'Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, your majesty, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day.' When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. Then the men went as a group to King Darius and said to him, 'Remember, your majesty, that according to the law of the Medes and Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed.' So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you." A stone was brought, we're told in verse 17, and placed over the mouth of the den. And the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Now we saw that when Daniel received notice of this new law, he obviously faced a dilemma. Prayer and fellowship with the Lord had safeguarded him from the corrupting influence of Babylonian culture, but it seems now that he would have to compromise his integrity by either ceasing to pray to God or by praying privately. But Daniel trusted the Lord for deliverance. He would continue with his normal practice. His habit had been to pray regularly. Verse 10 tells us that he had always prayed toward Jerusalem. We read in 2 Chronicles, centuries earlier, when Solomon dedicated the temple in Jerusalem, we read that Solomon prayed this prayer, just the opening of it in 2 Chronicles chapter 6, verse 21 says, "Hear the supplications of your servants and of your people Israel when they pray toward this place. Hear from heaven your dwelling place, and when you hear, forgive." And verse 10 also says that Daniel's practice had always been to pray three times each day. This reminds us of Psalm 55, verses 1, 9, and 10, and 16 and 17. We read, "Listen to my prayer, O God, do not ignore my plea." And then in verses 9 and 10, the psalmist says, "Lord, confuse the wicked, confound their words, for I see violence and strife in the city. Day and night they prowl about on its walls, malice and abuse are within it." But contrasting himself, he says in verses 16 and 17, "As for me, I call to God, and the Lord saves me. Evening, morning, and noon." There's your three times a day. He said, "I cry out in distress, and he hears my voice." From the text we just read in Daniel, it seems apparent that Daniel's opponents knew where and when Daniel prayed. So they went to his room at the right time, and as expected, they found him praying. The officials then hurried to King Darius and reminded him that he is the one who had signed the decree, and that the decree could neither be changed nor revoked. In reporting Daniel's disobedience to Darius, the conspirators represented Daniel's praying three times daily as willful disrespect to the king. And so Daniel was put in the den of lions, and a heavy stone was placed over the pit, and it was secured with clay, bearing the king's royal seal. Then we pick up reading in verse 18. It says, "Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, 'Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions?' Daniel answered, 'May the king live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, your majesty.'" Verse 23 says, "The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted in his God. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Then Darius, King Darius, wrote to all the nations and peoples of every language in all the earth and said, 'May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions.'" So Daniel prospered, we're told in verse 28. during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. So in this chapter, we see Daniel overcoming incredible difficulties. We see him succeeding where many lesser men would have failed. But it's critical that we realize that Daniel succeeded not merely because he had more talent and drive than other men. Daniel succeeded because he was first and foremost a man of faith. He was a man with a deep faith in God. Psalm 56 verses 3 and 4 says, "Whenever I am afraid, I will trust in you. In God I have put my trust. I will not fear. What can flesh do to me?" That is a very apt description of Daniel. Daniel's actions were not arbitrary. Daniel acted on the basis of deep faith and trust in God. This was not some superficial faith where he just glibly talked about how awesome his God was all the time. Daniel was deeply and genuinely committed to the Lord. This is made clear by the statements of his enemies. We read in verses 4 and 5 that they could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy, and neither corrupt nor negligent. And finally, these men said in verse 5, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God." Daniel's faith was real. He knew the God of the book, and he knew the book of God. His heart, as well as his head, was involved in his faith. Daniel's faith and prayer life were linked in a vital way. It's understood that Daniel was probably in his mid to late 80s at this time. And in chapter 6, verse 10, we have a man in his 80s acting on the basis of lifelong habits, not momentary impulses. Verse 10 says, "When Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God just as he had done before." Faith cannot be turned on in an emergency unless there's a reservoir to draw from. With Daniel, as with Abraham and others, faith was a principle of life. If Daniel had habitually allowed lesser things to interfere with his praying, it's most unlikely that he could have stood his ground when he was threatened with death. Daniel's faith is shown in that he courageously stood alone. No visible means of support to help him. We may never know that God is all we need until God is all we have. In 2 Timothy 4, verses 16 and 17, the Apostle Paul spoke about how he was forsaken by others when he was in prison for Christ. He said, "At my first defense, no one stood with me, but all four deserted me. But the Lord stood with me and strengthened me." When Daniel was faced with difficult and important choices, Daniel chose. He chose rather than wasting time trying to figure a way to have it both ways. His obedience was prompt. Understanding can wait, but obedience cannot. When our duty is clear, action should be immediate. There are grave dangers in postponing the dictates of conscience. Delayed obedience is often a sign of indifference. When Elijah was facing the people on Mount Carmel in 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 21, we're told that Elijah went before the people and said, "How long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal is God, follow him." Elijah was saying, make up your mind. And this is reminiscent of the statement, the very famous statement of Joshua in Joshua 24, verse 15, when he said, "Choose this day whom you will serve." Daniel had integrity. Daniel had his priorities straight. He understood that even an unrighteous law is no excuse for unrighteous conduct. Integrity is defined as the possession of high moral principles or professional standards, the state of being complete and undivided, the state of being sound and undamaged. Honesty is conforming our words to reality. Integrity is conforming reality to our words. This means that we live what our words claim. We live what we profess. We might say that integrity means consistency between our convictions and our conduct. We cannot expect to stand strong in the face of trials if our religion is no more than attending services a few times a week. Daniel's depth and substance can be attributed to his regular daily contact with God. Daniel had confidence in God because he daily communicated with God. Daniel overcame his difficulties because he had integrity. And his integrity was founded on faith in God. His integrity was not founded on his confidence in his parents' religion. It was not founded on devotion to his church. His trust was in the Lord. His commitment was to his God. May we make every effort to have a faith like Daniel's.